Hi, everybody. Ron Alcoholic. I'm not going to use a microphone. Oh, I'm so nervous. Geez, you know, I just love everybody in this room, you know, and I have to start off with that. You know, I'm so very grateful, you know. I'm just truly grateful. I'd like to thank Humi. I'd like to thank my home group, you know, for having me here and seeing me here usually every week. I couldn't be here for the summer, but, you know, I love this group, and I love the people in this group, you know. So, yeah, 26 years. I started drinking at a young age. I started drinking, you know, like everybody else, probably around 11 or 12. And, you know, and like the time I was 14, I started the waterfront. So I started a man's job and I started the waterfront. And here I was just 14 years old, and here's ships full of booze and containers full of booze. And man, it was the place for me. Like, it truly was a place for me, you know. And, you know, I even spoke a little bit last night. And if you didn't drink, you'd probably get fired. You know, that's just how life was on the waterfront back then. And, you know, so I fit in just perfectly. I really did. And, you know, I drank, and I drank a lot. So there wasn't any, you know, middle of the road kind of drinking with me. It was all or nothing. And that's how it was for me. And it got out of control. You know, it got so much out of control, I didn't know what was going on in my life. You know, so here's a kid who's 14 years old, and the next thing you know, I'm dying at like 23 years old and 24 years old, and I'm dying. You know, and I didn't know how to not die. I knew how to drink. I knew how to lie. I knew how to cheat. I knew how to be miserable. I knew how to hate people. But I didn't know the other side of life. And I really didn't. So my life every single day was like that. You know, and try to get out of that. And it's almost impossible to get out of hell when you're in it. Like, it's almost impossible. And I needed help. And I know I needed help. And I got help one day. You know, somebody on the other end of the phone said, can you quit for one day? And I said, yeah, but where's that going to get me? And I knew I could quit for one day, but I didn't know about any other day after that. And, you know, I did quit for that one day. And then I got help the next day. I ended up going into detox, and I hated it there. I really did. I thought I was going to a country club. But there was no swimming pools. There's no tennis courts. You know, and it was just literally hell. And when I was there, I was at Second Avenue, and I smoked all the time. You could smoke back then, and you know, and I was dying. And even a counselor there told me that you're going to die. That's it. You know, I'm like less than 100 pounds, and she said like you're going to die, and I believed her, and I knew that. So how do you like living life knowing that you're going to die every day? And that's how life was. And there was no hope. And there was no love. There was no friendship. There was no family because I didn't allow it. I was so caught up and so selfish and self-centered. I was so caught up in me, I was dying. So here came a guy who turned out to be my first sponsor and said, you know what, I'll love you. And I'll hang out with you. And he really didn't tell me what to do. And a few people know him around the rooms. As I look around, I see Alex. And, of course, Sandy at the back, who I just dearly love forever. And these are the guys who helped me at the very beginning, you know. And other guys like Damon and, you know. So this guy, Damon, came into my life. And he said, you know, he took me to detox, hated it. I went to my very first meeting. When I was in detox, he pulled me out of detox, and he took me to a meeting. He had special privileges, so he took me right out of detox, and that was fantastic. I thought, thank God somebody's taking me out of this place. And then he took me right to a meeting, and I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. He took me back to detox that night, but something happened. Something happened when I went into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and Sandy probably, and Alex probably remember that night what happened to me. Is I went to the 8:30 meeting at the Vancouver Recovery Club, and I sat at the very back, and I heard Yuri, I don't know if he's here today, but first speaker I ever heard in AA, and he says, we drink vodka like you drink beer, and that's what he was saying, and I could relate to that, right? But he says, you don't ever have to drink again. And I didn't really ever hear that you don't ever have to drink again. I always heard, let's drink more, right? So I heard Yuri and I heard a few other speakers that night, and what you guys gave me, my very first meeting 26 years ago, you guys gave me hope. And to give hope to an alcoholic, somebody who's dying, somebody who's worthless, somebody who's helpless, somebody who doesn't deserve to even have one friend, because that's how I feel. I don't deserve to have even one friend. I don't deserve it at all. And somebody became a friend of mine. And it changed my life. And I listened to the meeting, and I went to the meeting. I loved it so much, I hung around for the 11 o'clock meeting. And then I went back to detox and still hated it. But I was actually transformed at that time, because I saw all the miserable people in detox. Here's a guy now on fire. Like, I'm on fire, I'm in detox now, I'm on fire. I love AA now, right? Of course I do. You guys gave me hope. You guys, I believed what you told me. I believed that you guys did love me, and you did want to hang out with me, and you would show me a new way to live life. That's all I ever wanted. And I got it from the very first day. And it continued to get better and better and better since that day. And it's only because of you. Right? It's only because of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's about the people who did reach out for me. Sandy reminded me I was in the hospital, and I was dying in the hospital sober. I had food poisoning, salmonella food poisoning, dying in the hospital. Sandy came to visit me every day. Like, who does that? Sandy does. Right? Who welcomes you to every meeting? You see him, and he welcomes you to every meeting. And it doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter what color you are, doesn't matter if you got puke over you, you pissed yourself, who's gonna welcome you? Alex. Right? So I had these examples of love. I had these examples that just warmed my heart. And I needed to have a heart that was warm, because everything was broken. And when you're broken, anything will do. And especially if it's positive and it's loving. You know, and thank God these guys didn't tell me what to do, because I probably wouldn't have done it. But what happened was, you all told me what to do, and I believed you. And you guys talked about the 12 steps. You talked about God. You talked about meetings. You talked about home groups. You talked about sponsoring people. It changed my life. And I got here, and I had a few months sober, and I'm watching these guys, and I thought, I'm going to be just like these guys, right? So I had 2 months sober, and I start sponsoring people. I don't have a clue about the steps. Nothing. And I start sponsoring people, and I'm loving it. They're not, but I am. But nothing will push you further into the 12 steps than to sponsor somebody and to walk with another alcoholic. Nothing will push you further into the steps, or fear. You know, so it's your choice what you want to pick. If you want to live in fear and do the steps, or if you want to just help somebody and do the steps. But either way, you're going to get there. And that's where I went. I ended up starting sponsor people. I got into the big book, and I didn't understand it. I didn't understand it for a long time. I understand it today. And it's very clear cut. And I have to talk about the steps, a little bit about the steps. And I know I'm on a time schedule here and stuff, but, you know, I cannot be up here without giving a message of hope and a message of love and a little bit about the steps. And why are we even here? And like, what is an alcoholic and stuff, right? I would have bet you all the money in the world when I was here. I wanted what you had. If you want what we have, you're willing to go to any length and you take certain steps. I needed these steps. I would have paid for them. I would have given my whole year's paycheck for these steps. I would have given anything for these steps. And, you know, I get people today, they're sort of willing and, you know, and yeah, okay, maybe I'll get back to you. And man, not me. It's like, what do I need to do to live? To live? Because I don't want to die. This isn't kidding around here. And I see my friend Olivia, she's going to be up here sharing later. But I see people who are dying, but today they're living and they want to live life. And it's such an inspiration, you know, with the people that I've been able to hang out with. But I didn't know what the problem was. And I even heard it the other night. I heard somebody was at her, they're talking about the big book, and I'm always talking about the problem is our thinking. And somebody told me the other night, well, they're saying the problem isn't the thinking, and it's just some cliche they use in AA. Wrong! It's wrong! If you hear something I say, and if it's not in the book, go with the book. And it talks about our main problem is in our mind. Right? That tells me the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. That means our thinking. And the main problem of the alcoholic is your thinking. And my thinking got me to that alcohol every time. It wasn't the alcohol that's the problem. Actually, alcohol was the solution. Right? Because I couldn't accept and I couldn't just what's the word I'm thinking of is, but I just couldn't handle reality and how I felt anymore. And if you don't like the way you feel, you're going to go and grab something to take you away from that. And my solution was alcohol, and it was alcohol all the time. That's it. Solution, drink. Solution, drink. I'm irritable, restless, discontent. I didn't know that there's the obsession of the mind and then there's the allergy. It's a twofold disease. But something happens before I even think about drinking. And Dr. Silver talks about it. It's the irritable, restless, discontent. And he explains it even further. And he explains, like, you can't even tell the difference between the truth and the false. I didn't know that. I didn't know even before my head goes to even think about drinking. Is I'm irritable, restless, discontent. I'm not spiritually okay. And if I was spiritually okay, so here's a good question for everybody. If I'm spiritually okay right now, today, am I going to drink? And the answer is no, you're not. But what happens through the whole day is people don't do what we want. And we don't get our own way. And people cut us off. And we break nails, the girls break the nails, and they get irritable, restless, discontent, right? Anything. Somebody cuts off a guy, you know, and I get pissed off. I don't do that anymore. And what happened was I was always acting from my defects of character. I was always reacting, and I'm reacting this way, and I'm reacting this way. I don't react that way anymore. And I was always reacting out of selfishness and self-centeredness. I was reacting from what I think. I was reacting from what I know. And that's not the way to live life. We need to react with love. Right? And I didn't know that until I did this work. I need to react with love. And people say, oh, well, she shouldn't have done this to me. My girlfriend shouldn't have done this to me. Or my son shouldn't have done this to me, and I'm pissed off, and I don't care what the problem is, because I get many phone calls, many, through the day of, but it's all the same, it's, right, and it's, but it all means the same to me, and it means you're in the problem, and you're in your thinking, and you're in your head, and you're in the wrong place. I'm in the solution. So I talk to you and I go, okay. And I go, where's God? Right? And what do you think God would do? And, you know, how about, is it spiritual? You know, and I try to get to that place of goodness. And I try to get to the solution right away. So I didn't know I had this irritable, restless discontent that happens before I even think. And it's a warning light for any alcoholics. It means you're spiritually not okay. And if you're spiritually not okay, what are you going to do? You're going to go right to the problem. And the problem is your thinking. Right? And I didn't know that. So then I'd go right to my thinking, which is the problem. And then, you know, it would be hell. And then, you know, people actually go back out drinking. Because that's your solution. So let's get to the real solution now. So step one is the problem. And the main problem is our thinking. So what's the solution? Well, that comes in step two. And like Annie and Angie was saying, and like everybody else knows here, if you know me, I go right to the solution, and it's God. And when I was around here, I love anybody atheist here, I love you. If you're atheist, I love you, because I can help turn an atheist into a believer within seconds. I can. And so can the big book. Right? And I went to like Hawaii and I went to Mexico and I'm trying to find God and girls and all kinds of stuff. Nowhere did I find God. You know, I thought many times, but no. But I read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and I go with what the book says. And I'm not here to tell you who God is. I'm not. I can't do that. And they talk about your own power greater than yourself. But it also says on page 25, it says, our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. I love that. God's been within me the whole time in my heart, and I didn't know it. My mind got in the way. How can my heart reach your heart if your mind's in the way? It can't happen. We need to have an open mind. And when you do have an open mind, then my heart can connect to your heart. And that's really step two, is go straight to the solution. And I give an analogy, or whatever, I'm going to tell you about it. Is I got a color TV, and it's a 50-inch TV, and it breaks. What's the very first thing that happens is I'm irritable, restless, discontent. I'm like, oh my God, my TV's broken. I'm a guy. And for a girl, it's your nail. Right? And you're like, oh my God, my nail broke. It hurts. And my TV's broken. Same situation. And I'm irritable, restless, discontent. I don't know what to do. It hurts. And my TV, oh my God. And I'm irritable, restless, discontent. And I go to my wallet and I find out I got money. I go and I get my TV fixed. The girl gets her nails done. And she comes back and she's super happy. And I'm super happy my TV is now fixed. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so happy. 2 weeks down the road, the girl breaks her nail again. And what's the first thing that happens? My TV breaks 2 weeks down the road. And my TV breaks. What's the very first thing that happens? And most people, and I put on a lot of workshops, everybody tells me this. They go, they're irritable, restless, discontent right away. And I don't meet very many people right away who would answer different than that. But when you're close to God, and you're close to the solution, you're going to go right to the solution. And my solution is take my TV in. I just went there 2 weeks ago, and I go straight to the solution today. Same goes with the girl. She goes, oh, I broke my nail. I'm going to go get it fixed. See, today, that's what step two is about for me. That's what step three is about. Going straight to the solution. Doesn't matter what the problem is. Doesn't matter about all that chatter that you hear from newcomers or from old timers or from anybody. If they're not in the solution, they're in the problem. And you're in your thinking, and it's selfishness and self-centeredness. And I'm going to do it in a nice, soft, loving way, is bring you back to the solution. Right? And that's basically the first three steps. Then we get into step four and, you know, the resentment. And I don't know if anybody has resentments, but everybody I talk to in AA has resentments. I don't know why. I don't know why you guys have resentments. And if you even have one resentment, and if you've done this work, I think you might be doing it wrong. Right? Right? Am I doing something wrong? Right? I don't get resentments anymore. And if I do, I deal with it right there and then. I can't afford to be pissed off at you and not love you. Right? Like, who am I to even for a second be like and judge you right? Like out of any defects of character. I can't do that, but I can judge you with love today. And resentments, and why I'm talking about resentments is, I'll tell you why, is because once we do this work, something happens. And what we learn is the resentment has nothing to do with those people. And I didn't know that. So you're not allowed to be resentful. It has nothing to do with you. So if you're resentful at me, sorry, has nothing to do with me. Right? If you have a resentment towards anybody, it has nothing to do with them. See, I'm so broken and I'm so screwed up, I didn't even know it. Right? Until I did the work. What happens is I had to see how I reacted from you. Right? I had to, because I reacted really mean from you because I didn't like what you said. You didn't like what I did. You wouldn't go out with me. You wouldn't, you know, give me money, you know, right? You hurt me. But it has nothing to do with them. And I've reacted wrong the whole time. And that's why we do this work and we deal with our fears, the sex, and the harms. And then we go and we deal with our defects of characters and we get to one of my favorite steps. And one of my favorite steps is step 9. And we have to make amends to people. And Nikki and I were just talking about it last night. We're talking about making amends. And I don't want anybody making amends. I don't. Hear me out. I don't want anybody making amends to anybody. I don't want you making amends. And I know what the big book says. Before you make amends to you. I don't. If I'm not okay with me, how can I go to you and make an amends to you? I won't do that. I can't do that. It's almost impossible. If I won't do it, I'm not going to make somebody else do it. The amends is for us. The amends to me is the most important amends I'm ever going to make. And I get some sort of like game plan. I need to go to meetings. I need to phone my sponsor. I need to do the step. I have a game plan, a life for me. And it's a loving way of life for me. And when I'm okay with me, guess what? You can go to anybody. And you can make amends to anybody. It doesn't matter who it is. And it doesn't matter whoever. And if you're not going to do that, you really haven't made amends to you first. And when I'm okay with me, I'm okay with you. And if I'm okay with you, I'm okay with the world. And that's where I want to be. Right? That's exactly where I want to be. And then I can make amends. And I would suggest don't make amends until you're okay with you. Oh, it's good to see you, Bob, from the old Bay group. Yeah. Then there's step 10. And a lot of people say, you know, I do step 10 at night. And I'm like, I don't know about that because... you were supposed to be doing step 10 all through the day, right? Step 10 is done through all through the day, right? If I get one of those four main defects of character, that's the very first thing. The second thing is I'm supposed to pray, right? The third thing is I need to pray. I need to tell somebody immediately. The fourth thing I'm supposed to do is make amends quickly. And the fifth thing I'm supposed to do in step 10 is I'm supposed to turn my thoughts on how I can help others. And then it talks about love and tolerance is our code. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So do I need to love everybody in this world? Yes. I go with what the book says. Right? We have to love everybody. I might not like what you do. You might not even like what I do or what I say. But you have to love me. You have to. And I have to love you too. It's what the book says. Right? Who am I to stand in the way of all of us being children of God? Who am I going to get in the way of that with? No one. And then step 11 is one of my favorite. And it's on the awakening. But I love when we retire at night. We have to answer those questions when I retire at night. And it changes everything. So anybody who ever needs to pull up their socks and wants to live this spiritual way of life, step 11 will do it when I retire at night. And, you know, we answer the questions. And you're basically going through all the steps in step 11 and when I retire at night. And you answer the 9 questions. And it changes our life. And then, of course, step 12 is helping others. You know, and how do I help others today? I help others by taking them through the steps. And, you know, sometimes I even question, like, you know, is this even working? Or, you know, sometimes I wonder, and, you know, that's all in the problem, right? I need to be in the solution, and the solution and the truth, that's where the truth is inside my heart and through my actions. And I know what the truth is it does help people. These steps will change your life. I got the opportunity to help somebody, and he spoke English, but he was from Russia, and we went through the steps, and we Skyped and went through the steps, and I'm helping a few guys in New York and other places, because I put myself out there. And this guy is on fire too, and he's in Russia, and he says he's going to spread love to everybody in Russia, you know. And, you know, just hearing that, you know, I'm just glad that I could just touch even just one heart. You know, just to touch one heart. And I look around the rooms at a few people that your heart has touched mine in many ways. You know, and I'm glad that my heart can be able to even touch your heart. You know, and with that, you know, how do we help others? We take them through this work. You know, I always thought it was, you know, just to pick them up and take them to meetings and stuff. And, you know, helping people through this work has changed my life. You know, and, you know, before I even end with anything is, you know, I've learned to always react with love in everything I do. And I get hurt, and I have my moments. And just, you know, even recently, 6 months ago, I went to Mexico, and my son went to Saskatoon, and he met some girl there, and he ended up staying there. He's lived with me for probably 6 years, my son. And he phoned me when I was in Mexico, and he said, "Dad, I'm not coming home. I'm going to stay here." And I didn't know anything about the girl. And the first reaction I went was, "Oh my God." And I was right in the problem. And I couldn't talk to him. I was so upset I couldn't talk to them. I was hurt. And I said, "You know what? Can I just talk to you later? Because I don't know how to deal with this." So I hung up the phone, and thank God I was with my sponsor, and I phoned my son back about half an hour later, and I was just livid how he could just leave me and move to Saskatoon. And I phoned him back, and I said, "You know what? I love you, and I'm here to support you. I'm willing to do anything for you." You know, and it just changed everything, even in the relationship with my son and I, and he's 16. And now he wants to move back to Vancouver once his girlfriend graduates. They want to move here. My daughter wants to move here. And all I can do today is to be that example, that loving example, and to always to react with love. And, you know, I try to live with this every single day of my life. I try to always react with love. I'm not perfect like anybody else. But when we live like this, it's a good way to live. It's a happy way to live. And it's a nice way to live. So, you know, don't forget about helping others and loving others. And treat everyone with love and respect. Thanks for my sobriety.